welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Colleen Pilar, and as always, I'm joined with Julie Fudge-Smith. But today we have a special guest as well. Today we're going to be talking to Ellie Hicks. It's one of Julie's daughters, and Ellie is a writer, and she has contributed a piece on amreading.com about the 10 best literary dogs, which, of course, Julie and I think is a very fascinating subject. So we wanted to talk to Ellie about these dogs and, of course, why dogs are such an important part of books and relationships and literature for us. You know, what value does a dog add to a story? So welcome, Ellie. We're glad to have you.
Oh, well, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about, first off, why did you pick this topic, and then any of these books that you think are particularly exciting or special?
I really don't remember how I came up with the topic. I just was pitching ideas to meet my quota that week, and somehow this one came in. Before, because I know people are going to ask about this, before people ask, Old Yeller is not on the list, and neither are Old Dan and Little Anne from Where the Red Fern Grows. And that is not because I don't think they are some of the best literary dogs. It's because another writer on the site had done an article on the saddest pet deaths in literature, and my editor said, do not repeat anything from that list.
Yes.
And Old Yeller and Where the Red Fern Grows were both on that list. So that's why they're not there.
Okay, so we won't judge your literary ability based on the fact
exactly.
that you're
missing
those important dogs.
Right. So that being said, I came up with my own list of 10 dogs here. I start off, I couldn't do Old Yeller, so probably the next most sort of classic dog is, of course, Lassie, who everybody thinks of the TV show, but she originally appeared in a book. Next, I've got Muggs from My Life in Hard Times by James Thurber. Muggs is probably a lesser known one, but I think he's pretty great. So does Mom.
That's true.
Next we have Ribsy from the Henry Huggins series by Beverly Cleary. Mm-hmm. One of my personal favorites. And then we have Buck from Call of the Wild. Can't really make a list about dogs and books without Buck.
Yeah.
We have Talk from the Phantom Tollbooth, who is maybe stretching the definition of dog a bit because he's part watch. Toto from The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, always a classic. Nana from Peter Pan, every kid's dream babysitter. Fang from Harry Potter, because I'm a Potterhead. The Dire Wolves from A Song of Ice and Fire / Game of Thrones, also possibly stretching the definition of dog a little bit, but still really cool. And finally, we have Argos from The Odyssey, who is actually one of the first dogs ever named in Western literature.
I thought that was really interesting. I didn't know that about Argos until reading your blog. That was a very interesting piece to me. So of these dogs, which one, you know, is there one that if that dog could be a part of your family, that would be the one you'd want?
Well, I don't think it would be Muggs, because he's also known as the dog who bit people. But
so maybe not Muggs.
Well, I think if you're just going for a family dog, I really think the sort of quintessential family dog on this list would be Ribsy. Ribsy was everybody's sort of best friend dog. You know, he goes everywhere with Henry, who's his boy. And it's the classic story, you know, Henry finds Ribsy on the street. He's homeless. You know, he brings him home, and then Ribsy goes everywhere with him, waits for him after school, runs along with his bike. They go to the park. They go fishing. You know, they're just kind of always together. And you know, Beverly clearly talks a lot about how Ribsy is ever so patient with little kids like Ramona, who's always running up and grabbing his tail and things like that. So sign of a good-tempered dog. So I think your kind of classic family kid and dog best friend type of dog on this list would be Ribsy.
I would agree. I loved Ribsy. I loved Henry and Ribsy. I loved Ribsy. Emma, her sister, used to listen to the books on tape, and in one of the books, they talk about the dog food that Ribsy eat, which is Woofies. And one day we're sitting at the dinner table, and you remember, and Emma just starts singing the Woofie song. And we're all like, what the heck? And it was like,
Woofie's dog food is the best. Contains more meat than all the rest. So buy your dog a can today and watch it chase his blues away. Woof, 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 Woofies!
How long ago was this, and why is it still in your head?
This must have been 10 or 12 years ago when we were living in Virginia, and Emma was reading it. But she just would sing it all the time. It reminded us a lot of Ramona, because Ramona would sing it all the time, and Emma was very much like Ramona, so we had
Beverly
a good time
Cleary
with that
has
one.
A great way of describing people and behavior and relationships, so yeah, her stuff does kind of stick with you. Yeah. That is hysterical that the two of you can sing that song perfectly together.
You say it's hysterical. I think it's kind of sad. But,
hey, every family needs a hobby.
That's right.
So singing odd jingles from nature.
That's right.
Other people use actual commercials from TV, but no. You guys take it a step further.
Okay, so Colleen, are there any books on this list that bring back special memories for you or that you connected with in a particular way?
Well, the one book that brought back a vivid memory for me was Call of the Wild, Buck. Mostly, it brings back memories of sitting in the kitchen talking to my father late at night about dog books, because he was a dog lover too. And so he recommended that I read all of the Jack London books, and of course I loved Call of the Wild. And then several by Jim Kilgard, which was, I don't remember where this man lived, but he wrote books in the 40s about dogs, and he had one very famous book called Big Red, a whole series about Irish setters. So I loved those books. Partially, I love these books because they showed me a slice of life so very unlike my suburban life. So, Call of the Wild was nothing like life in Burke, Virginia.
Where nothing, really?
Yeah, not a bit like it. You know, this, you know, out in Alaska and the rugged tundra and all of that kind of stuff. So I said it was a little bit the same attraction I had to these as I had to Little House on the Prairie. You know, books that showed me a whole different sense of the world.
Right. Well, speaking of Little House on the Prairie, I did not think to put this one on the list, but it's one that...
Shame on you.
Yeah. It's one that Mom has, which was Jack, who, I read all the Little House books. I loved them to death. I don't remember Jack, so...
You don't remember Jack? You don't remember the river crossing where Jack had to swim the river because Paul wouldn't let him in the wagon? And Laura's like, Paul, let him in the wagon. And Paul says, no, we can't let him in the wagon. He's a dog. And so Jack swam the river, and then he got swept away, and they got across the river. They almost... You know, the whole thing almost capsized, and they go and they make their camp, and they're all feeling very, very sad because Jack didn't make it across the river. And Pa's again, like, you know, maybe I should have let him in the wagon after all. And they see off in the distance behind the firelight two little eyes, and so Pa gets his rifle or shotgun, whatever it is he carried, and
the suspense.
And he's like, and suddenly Laura goes, Pa, no! And it turned out it was Jack. He had survived the river, and he got and he found his family, and they were all really happy. And then he lives with them for several years, and then he finally dies very peacefully in his bed. And he was some sort of a bulldog. Anyway, I remember him dearly. The other thing that
really
I
remember, I don't remember Pa being that much of a jerk either. Like, Pa, let the dog on the wagon. That seems very out of character from what I remember, but okay.
But Pa, the other thing, the reason why I think Jack really stood out for me was because as far as Pa was concerned, if you were traveling west in a wagon with your family, it seems to me, for him, the essential equipment was the horses, or the oxen, the wagon, and the dog. Because the dog served as a guard dog for them. And they encountered another family who was moving west who had been, I think, victimized by bandits because they weren't alerted by their dog. And so
well, then
you
think he would definitely let the dog on the wagon to cross the river.
You would think so, but apparently no.
But anyway.
Apparently dogs don't belong in wagons.
Apparently. I was thunderstruck, yes. But anyway, but I remember Jack, and he was some sort of a brindle bulldog sort, and I cried when he died. You didn't cry when he died?
I don't know. I was like seven.
You cried
well,
at
speaking
all.
Speaking of seven and crying, that brings us to Toto and the Wizard of Oz. And I used to watch the Wizard of Oz. We had a couch that had legs and like a flap, the cloth covered covered. So I would go under the couch and watch so that I could submerge myself under the couch and let the fabric drop down whenever the witch was on and threatening Toto. And once early on a date, my husband went, and your little dog too. And he made the noise and I had a visceral reaction. Like, and my little dog too. Because truly, as a child and as an adult, there's really nothing scarier to me than the fact that you might come and hurt my dog.
I mean, well, you know, let's say, you know, but part of the whole reason Dorothy ends up in Oz is because originally she tries to run away to protect her dog. Mm-hmm. From, you know, what was it, Mrs. Gulch, I think, is the nasty neighbor.
Yeah, terrible.
You know, and then she gets back.
Terrible.
Little did she know this was going to be the musical Family Dog
podcast.
Books and music. We're just covering it all. You know, but I think, yeah, that definitely is a very, you know, kids love their dogs and will do really crazy, silly things when they think their dogs are threatened.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite James Herriot stories about a dog was about a little boy who was, he was a bit of a difficult child, kind of like the bully in the neighborhood. And he had a little dog who got sick. And his parents, who were not, there must have been a long pause line, said that they wouldn't pay for veterinary care, and the dog really needed it. And so the little boy really turned himself around. And he got a job at the local store, and he earned the money to pay for his dog's treatment, but unfortunately, the dog died. And he was heartbroken, and unfortunately, too, the lesson didn't last, and he went back to sort of his old ways. But I just remember thinking that dogs have that ability to make us rise to the very best angels of our nature, and we will do pretty much anything we can to ensure their safety and health and well-being. And hopefully most of us will learn something from it that will be more long lasting, but I just remember that story very clearly. Of course, I also love James Herriot and, Tricky Woo, who was the little Pekingese who used to go flop-bot when she had impacted anal glands. And, there's another
set. He did have great descriptions of behavior.
Yeah, he did.
Tricky Woo the one who went cracker dog also?
Yes. She would go cracker dog because of course she had too much fat in her diet and anyway, but yeah, she would go cracker dog. And
yeah, the descriptions in his books were always so funny.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, and Tricky Woo was the one who would send Christmas hampers to Dr. Herriot, who was his friend. And James actually wrote thank you notes to Tricky Woo. And apparently at one point, Tricky Woo was terribly upset because the note had been addressed to Mr. Tricky Woo, and he really was Master Tricky Woo. But when he saw it was from Dr. Herriot, you know, he was willing to let it go.
So dogs can make us, I mean, dog stories are great because they can make you laugh, they can make you cry, they can really sort of evoke just a huge range of emotions, just like dogs can. And that's what's great about a well-written book. And of course, Old Yeller was not on Ellie's list, but I remember the first time when I read that in the fourth grade, it was the first time that literature really moved me. It's the first time I remember exactly where I was sitting when I read the section about where, spoiler here, Old Yeller dies.
What? How can you just ruin that for me? I thought he went to live on a farm.
That's right. The magic farm for rabid dogs. Yeah, spoiler alert, most dog books, the dog dies. That's the bummer.
The hard thing.
I'm going to write a dog book where everybody lives. But it just, the literature can be so powerful. And that's what it really brought home for me with Old Yeller. I knew that it was a fictional dog, and yet it moved me to the very core of my being. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the relationship piece, too. Like, even on your list, you've got the dire wolves, and that each of the children in the family had a personal relationship with a different dire wolf.
Yes.
And that those animals in the books, I think, are very similar to the human that they, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm forgetting my character names in this moment. Sansa's lady had – they were both very demure, you know.
Yeah.
And Arya's – direwolf, whose name is escaping me at this moment, was a bit more adventurous, just like Arya is, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, she had the wolf that that bit Joffrey, the crown prince, which was, mm-hmm. you know, totally an Arya thing.
Yeah.
Mom's looking very confused.
But the relationship, the idea of that there's someone who's got your back.
Yeah.
Right.
It goes both ways. And so in Harry Potter, I totally love that Hagrid has Fang's back because Fang is not very brave. and I think that that's fine. And Hagrid thinks that that's fine. You know?
Yeah.
Hagrid's like, he's just not that brave. Okay. Your dog named Fang, who's a little bit of a scaredy cat.
Yeah. Well, Fang famously at the Battle of Hogwarts was, you know, up there ready to go. And then a vase near him exploded and he got scared and ran away. But at the same time, even Fang has his moments. I forget exactly which book it was in, but at one point, Hagrid is attacked by Death Eaters, and Fang flings himself in front of Hagrid and takes the stunning spell. So,
relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, so even Fang can rise to the occasion.
Yes.
So, yes. The other one I want to mention is Argos, Odysseus' dog. I'd forgotten about that until Ali mentioned it, but I do remember, and I do remember him dying and feeling like, I can, now my work here is done. I brought you home. And I remember feeling just really moved by that.
Yeah, you're home. Dad's back. You know, I don't have to take care of things anymore. You know, I was holding down the fort. Now you're here. To add to the poignancy of the scene, so Argos has been missing his master for 20 years, and when Odysseus does finally come home, he's in disguise, and nobody recognizes him. His son doesn't. His wife doesn't. The only, I'm going to say person, but not really person, who recognizes Odysseus through the disguise is Argos, is his dog. And then, just adding even more poignancy here, Odysseus knows that Argos is there and has been waiting for him, but he can't really get down and say hello, because if he acknowledges the dog, it breaks his disguise, which is necessary at the moment. So he and Argos kind of have to have this reunion from a little bit of a distance. You don't really get the whole, oh yes, daddy's home, you know, or it's kind of this silent acknowledgement. And then Argos kind of goes, okay, I'm done. And lays down, and that's the end. So that doesn't tug on your heartstrings.
Yeah, that's awful. I mean, it's awful to think that you wait for 20 years and then you just get to say hi from a distance. Like, I see you and you see me, but that's it. We can't actually connect.
And the fact that Argos seems to get that. You know, Argos doesn't rush towards Odysseus and break his disguise. It's like Argos goes, I get it. I understand. And that's another amazing part of it.
Relationship.
Yes, relationship.
It's all relationship. The whole podcast is just relationship, relationship.
It is. But the other thing is the fact that Argos lived for, what, 20 years?
That's all. Yeah, well, and then it had to have been longer than that, because if he, you know, would have had to have time to be around and bond to Odysseus before he left for the Trojan War. So, you know, give him another year or two there. So I really want to know what kind of dog this was. And in most of the pictures, it's a big dog, like a hound, which, you know, most big dogs don't live for 2 decades plus. So
he must have been eating woofies.
He must have been eating woofies.
Contains more meat than all the rest.
That's right.
So Julie, let's end with your favorite Muggs.
Oh, Muggs.
Why don't you tell us the story of Muggs and why you so adore him?
Well, Muggs, one is I'm a huge James Thurber fan, and I have been for, nigh on 40 years, maybe. Well, maybe not that long. Well, somewhere between 40.
Does it really matter, Mom? Just talking about a dog.
Yes. Everyone loves Thurber dogs, and Thurber loved dogs. And the thing about Muggs, what's so great about him is he's this sort of this irascible Airedale that was a member of the family, and he bit everyone, except for his mother. And he only took a passing swipe at her once. But his mother used to send chocolates to everybody that the dog bit. One year, she was sending, like, 23 boxes of chocolates at the end of the year to people. And he was the kind of dog where he ate at the table because he would bite you as you were putting his bowl on the ground. And
they had to meet the laundryman down at like the corner at the end of the street because he wouldn't come to their house.
And the only thing that would that he was just scared of was thunder. So they had this sheet of corrugated metal in the back of the house so if they needed the dog to come into the house so they could shut him into a room, they'd go out and rattle the corrugated metal in the backyard to imitate thunder to get Muggs to come into the house. And there was one time when he took a swipe at James and James swatted him on the rear.
Grabbed him by the tail. And then realized this was not a sustainable course of action.
And so,
he dropped the dog, who chased him into the living room.
And he jumped up on the mantle to get away from the dog until the mantle came crashing down, at which point Muggs took off because James figured it was probably, he thought it was thunder when the mantle came crashing down. But anyway, he lived a very long time, bit most everybody that they knew and beyond.
But as James Thurber's mother would point out, he only bit you once. After that, it was over, and he always felt bad afterwards.
He never carried a grudge. So, Muggs ended up coming back one day. He would come back from various scrapes. I mean, this is also a whole nother dog world than what we know about. You open the back door, kind of like when kids in the 50s, you open the back door, let the dog out. Sometime they'll come home, get something to eat, and maybe go back out again. And he would come home with various scratches and stuff. But one day he came home staggering, and they think he had been poisoned. And he ended up passing away. And they buried him along a dirt road with a simple epithet that said, Cave Canem.
Yeah.
Beware of the dog. So.
So I think Muggs is not the dog you'd want to have in your family. But I think at least.
But you want him in your library.
Right. And I think. In your library. I think at least just from a distance again, there's just something about him and his just sheer kind of irascibility and crankiness, and that it just makes him weirdly lovable. He's like the cranky old guy who lives down the street, and you don't really want to have him over for tea, but you kind of like having him there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it will be interesting to hear what our listeners have as their memorable dogs from literature.
Right.
And it was really interesting to just read through Ellie's list. There were some that I completely remembered and agreed with, and some that I had to think about more. Like, I honestly didn't know much about Argos and the Odyssey. And
well, I know nothing about what, the Crown of Thorns?
Game of Thrones.
See, I know nothing about this.
And you want to confuse her even more. Technically, Game of Thrones is the TV show, and the book series is actually, the real name is A Song of Ice and Fire, and Game of Thrones is only the first book.
Oh my heavens. Once again, I know nothing about the Crown of Thorns thing.
Yes.
So.
She knows nothing about that.
Nothing.
And that's okay.
And because of that, we could say, you know nothing, Julie Smith, but she wouldn't get it because she doesn't know anything about Game of Thrones. It's the Game of Thrones reference.
Okay.
Yay. Well, it was great having you on today, Ellie.
Well, thank
you.
It was a lot of fun.
Where can our listeners find you and read more about what you're writing these days?
That is mreading.com, AMREADING. And yeah, it's a fun site. It's just articles for book lovers, and there's all kinds of things on there and a lot of lists. People like lists, so we do a lot of lists along the lines of 10 best dogs in literature type of thing. So yeah, check it out.
We hope you'll do more dog-related topics, Ellie.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
We'll have to submit some ideas for you.
All right. Well, thanks, Colleen. Anybody who'd like to leave a comment or a question or their favorite book, they can email us.
We'd love to hear.
You can email us.
Actually, in an upcoming episode, we want to talk about books specifically for little kids.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Ideas on that, too. Send them our way.
Great, because, we do want to talk. You don't have to be able to read to enjoy books about dogs. Because there's lots of board books and other things. So, yes, we'd love to hear your suggestions on that. And you can leave your suggestions on our website, www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com. There's a feedback email there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also call and leave a voicemail at
614-349-1661.
All right. Thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing you all next week. Thanks, Colleen.
Thanks. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661. or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.